People sometimes ask me if I became the Ron Van Dam Show announcer because I love what Ron does and I love his comedy. Well, no. It's because Ron broke me out of a Tijuana prison back in 82 and smuggled me across the border in a suitcase in the trunk of a Yugo. And I still owe him for that. Muchas gracias, mi amigo. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. I am the one in the middle, just in case you couldn't pick me out of a crowd. How are you? How you feeling? Relax, I'll take it from here. Hungry? Can I get you something to eat? I don't blame you. Can I get you something to drink? Would you like a soda or something? A cup of coffee? No. Would you like an alcoholic beverage? Yeah, now you're talking. All right, fine. That's my audience, man. That's my audience. Let's take the opportunity of getting the kids out of the room because I don't know what's going to happen. So kindly escort your children out of the land of goodness, and it'll be just you and me from this point on. Okay, do we have a deal? All right. How you doing? Where you been? I've been sitting here all weekend waiting for you to click on me. Yeah. It's not an automated thing. I don't have the technology for this. So I just sit here all day waiting for you to click on me. It's kind of boring. It's like watching paint dry, but I'm always available for you. So yeah, this isn't recorded. I'm talking to you right now because you clicked on me. I just said, okay, here we go. I know. It's called manual podcasting. It's a new thing. I am so bad at technology. I am so bad. When I fire up my Google machine to go on the internet, I look for the crank. And apparently you don't have to crank anything up. I'm not good at this. I'm just not good at technology. I'm speaking into a tin can with a string. Yeah, that's how bad I am at technology. Did you get that, by the way? Did you understand that reference at all? Millennials don't know. Let me explain something, millennials. There used to be a time when kids used to take tin cans. They would empty the tin can and you take the lid off, and then you would tie a string to the bottom of the can, and through the string you would actually hear the vibrations into the other can. That was how we communicated. Things have come a long way, apparently. Anyway, how are you? I've got a great show for you today. My guest is an actual whistleblower. This is one of the first interviews he's done nationally, so thank you. But the whistleblower, and I'm not talking about a volleyball coach. I'm talking about a person who actually had the courage to stand up to something that was going on at his job, and he actually said, no, this is wrong, and he stood up and made a complaint and got chastised, and his life has changed for the worse accordingly. It's an interesting story, and we're going to do an extended interview with this gentleman coming up very, very shortly in the program. In the meantime, a happy Monday to you, the start of another week. It makes no difference. I don't know the difference between a Monday or a Tuesday or a Wednesday anymore, except they're spelled differently. Other than that, man, I have no idea. I get up, I shower, I do the show, I go back to bed, and that's it. I don't even eat. It's ridiculous. Sometimes I'll walk outside and I'll stare at a tree for 3 hours. Yeah, I know. At least in the fall, the leaves turn color. In the summer, they just nothing. There's nothing. I don't know. Anyway, I hope you're doing well. As I said, this is the only talk show where I actually care about you. All the other ones, they're just out to make money. I'm not. I actually care about you. So I think we have a bond going, one of those safety bonds where we don't touch each other. I don't even know who you are, yet we have a relationship. Actually, you have one with me. I don't know who the hell you are. So for me, this is perfect. This works out very, very well. Oh, by the way, this is cool. We're on so many different platforms, and I don't know what that means. In other words, you can listen to the show anywhere. We are now on the Stitcher Network, which is one of the more popular broadcast podcast networks, and we are on them now. All of our shows are there, all 1,600 of them so far. Oh, my God, what the hell's wrong with me? I know, right? I know. 1,600 shows, something's wrong. And that's just this show. Prior to that, I don't want to brag. This is my 30th year of doing radio. And yeah, that borders on somebody saying, Ron, that's wonderful. That's incredible. Congratulations. Or, Ron, that's incredibly pathetic. Right on the border of the two. This is one way or the other. There's nothing else going on. All right. Congratulate me. You're welcome. I am no longer buying spring water. I know. It's like getting off crack. I'm telling you something. I used to, for years and years, I bought Poland spring water because I thought there was some big freaking spring up in Maine that was closely guarded by people that couldn't really closely guard anything. This pristine, clean spring where water springs eternal from the bowels of the earth. The purest spring water, it was very tasty. I didn't know water could taste so good. It did. I don't know what they did. And then I did some research and I found, no, my images of this pure water coming out of a spring are not accurate, actually. And so I was told by many people, Ron, why are you wasting your money on buying water? You've been duped, you dope. Why don't you just drink tap water or get a filter thing in your refrigerator? I have water that comes out of my refrigerator. Unfortunately, it leaks on the bottom. That's where the water comes from. But no, I have a little spout on the door of my refrigerator. I guess I sprung some bucks at some point to get one of these fancy refrigerators that dispenses ice cubes, crushed ice, and water. To me, it's incredible. To other people, it's like, what's the big deal? So there's a little water filter in the refrigerator, and it filters the water from the tap. And I've been drinking that, and it costs me absolutely nothing, really, except for the price of the filter, which I have to change twice a year. Other than that, I'm so proud of myself. I'm walking around and I'm telling people, I'm telling strangers. I remove my mask and I say, I've got to tell you something. I don't know who you are. You're just a stranger on the street, but I got to tell you something. I'm not buying spring water in bottles anymore. And they look at me like, excuse me, should I call the authorities? I mean, get away from me. Why are you telling me this? Because I'm proud of it. I'm proud of things like this, and I need to tell somebody of my accomplishments. I haven't had ice cream in over 6 months now. Ron, you're kidding me. Yeah, I used to eat ice cream by the bucket. all that sugar and cholesterol and crap. And, you know, I was getting as big as a Macy's Day balloon parade thing. Those words were not in the proper order. So I stopped eating ice cream entirely, and I feel better, and I look better, and I feel like telling strangers this. Excuse me, I don't know your name or anything, but I don't drink spring water anymore, and I stopped eating ice cream. Where are you going? Hey, come back. Hey, where are you going? Hey, wait a minute. Why are you running away? That's sense of pride that I have in myself. You've got to have a sense of pride. You got to feel like you accomplished something. Isn't it good when you feel like you've accomplished something? It's been a long time. It's been, what gets in the way between me and accomplishment is a certain thing called laziness. It's unfortunately what I do well. I could get an award for being lazy. I have arguments with people, and they say that they're very lethargic, lazy people. And I challenge them. I say, not more than I am. And they say, oh, yes, I am. Oh, no, you're not. I end up winning. Anyway, my guest joins us. This is going to be interesting. It's something I'm very concerned about. When you're over the age of 40, you start taking daily medications prescribed by your doctor. You don't question what your doctor prescribes for you because you don't know what the hell they're talking about. They mention some kind of strange name, medication, and you don't know what it is. You just take it because the doctor, the god or goddess, told me to take this. Therefore, I shall do so. And then they intimidate you. Well, Ron, if you don't take the medication, this is what's going to happen to you. And it involves limbs falling off and horrible things. Organs folding. I mean, just they just scare you into taking this stuff. And I know, we all know, that a lot of these things that are prescribed for us are simply drug pushers, which are the pharmaceutical companies. In many regards, the pharmaceutical companies are drug pushers. I think that's the definition. And they do deals with the clinics and doctor organizations and medical groups in order to push their medications upon the patients. Anything can get out of hand. And when it does, it can be incredibly horrible. And that's what goes on. You can't go through life just like doubting everything like I do. But you know that something's wrong, big time. So when people step forward, they get chastised for doing it. They lose their job. Their lives change. You have to make a decision. Am I going to stand up, be a whistleblower? Or am I going to let the wrong continue right in front of my eyes? It's a difficult choice. And we're going to speak to one of those gentlemen who actually made that choice. We'll do that right after this message, which is very important. Actually, it involves water.
Let others say that water is just water. Aquamira. Each bottle of Aquamira, all-natural, artisanal, gourmet lifestyle water, Aquamira, contains only the finest hand-selected waters, gently and sustainably culled from free-range, certified glacial streams in fair trade countries. Aquamira. Skillfully aged in stainless steel, cruelty-free tanks, and quintuple filtered according to age-old Nepalese watersmithing techniques. Aquamira. Each non-GMO serving of Aquamira all-natural artisanal gourmet lifestyle water is allergen-free, safe for use on pets, and contains zero trans fats. Aquamira. Yes, let others say that water is just water. For the true discerning connoisseur, there is only one. There is only Aquamira.
Find Aquamira water in handy 42 packs in the beverage section of your local convenience store, liquor store, or gas station. Free bottle with every purchase of a Take This Job and Shove It lottery scratch-off ticket while supplies last. Aquamira all-natural gourmet lifestyle water is bottled by the overarching beverage conglomeration corporation, LLC.
Bruce Boyce joins us now. He's written a book called Cold Comfort. It's fascinating. It's one man's struggle to stop the illegal marketing of powerful opioid drugs and save lives. And I would normally say, Bruce, this is an incredible work of intriguing fiction, but it's not. It actually happened. That's intriguing in itself. Let's get started. Let's take me back. You were working as a pharmacist, do I understand?
I was working as, I originally started as a pharmaceutical rep.
Right.
Okay. And I worked for only two companies, and the second company was Cephalon. Mm-hmm. And I worked 1 year as a rep, and then became an area manager mm-hmm. for the company.
Okay. And I would assume that situations evolved as you worked with that company where you found some things out that were quite challenging to you.
Oh, very challenging, very challenging. We did, it was a startup company, Cephalon was a startup company, it was a neurobiotech company, mm-hmm. and we were doing really well in a lot of different areas, and we were doing it ethically, and it was exciting, and I loved my job.
Yeah.
And really helping patients and being part of the healthcare team, and I felt really strong about that. And the company decided that they were going to sell and market all their drugs off-label. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't deal with that. That mm-hmm. just was a bridge too far for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting with the term whistleblower, because they are heroes to the public, but to the companies upon which they are blowing the whistle, that becomes the opposite. You become targeted. And did you have that conflict?
Oh my gosh, yes. Hmm. As soon as the company found out, I was fired.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the statute and the whistleblower statute. There's a Section H in it that protects you, and so if you wind up being retaliated against, mm-hmm. you know, they can take your salary and so many times the salary, and as compensation. But what happens is that they really go after you, and they'll have somebody call a prospective mm-hmm. Employer.
Yeah.
And what occurs is that you get blackballed.
Yeah.
And so once you go like 6 months, 9 months out of the industry, you're done. Yeah. And I basically, the only thing I could find was that I flipped hamburgers for a friend of mine that owned a carny business.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, you know, it's the public kind of knows this story already, but just as a floating entity, they know that pharmaceutical companies go to doctors and clinics, et cetera, and try to sell their ware and make deals and that kind of thing. And then they push these things upon the public. I think we all know that, but somehow when someone like yourself comes forward, it solidifies that floater to come down to the ground and be in our face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, there's several reasons why I did the book, but one of those would be for people to get an inside view of what a whistleblower is about mm-hmm. and what it takes to do that. I even thought that I could do that and it wouldn't hurt my career mm-hmm. that I could just, and in fact, I really did it to begin with to protect patient lives. I was concerned the company was going to kill people, yeah. basically. Yeah. And I really stepped forward to say, hey, this is wrong. And I first thought was to save my job and to save the company because I loved doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
What it rolled into was being a whistleblower. I really didn't start off to be a whistleblower. And what happened was that I got sort of pulled into it by a nurse that said, would you do something about it? Because more people need to stand up and do that. And I said I would. And that's how it all evolved, is that I just actually sort of fell into being a whistleblower. But I'm glad I did.
Yeah, we're all glad that you did. It kind of concerns us as to how many whistles haven't been blown yet that are just as consequential. It's a good example of what can occur. So you've written this book. Is this the first book you've written?
Yes, it is. Okay. This is my first podcast as well.
Oh, really? Oh, congratulations. Well, thank you.
No, thank you.
Yeah. This is monumental. Have you been approached by journalists and media stations, et cetera, as far as making appearances and telling your story?
Actually, I was on CBS Whistleblower.
Okay.
And so I think it was episode 4.
Yeah.
And I was part of that, and that was in 2019.
Interesting. This sounds more like a 60 Minutes thing, actually.
Well, actually, I have been contacted by 60 Minutes as well.
Yeah, I would imagine. Usually those stories resonate for quite a period of time, and sometimes action is even taken in a congressional sense.
Correct.
Yeah. So how's everything now? I mean, as far as what you're doing, I mean, are you comfortable, or are you still under watch, so to speak?
You know, what's interesting is that, you know, we settled the first case.
Yes.
And we settled the second case, but I'm under a gag order on the second case.
I see.
And so I do talk about how the second case started, and you know, that came to the title of Cold Comfort. Mm-hmm. But it's fascinating in writing the book and talking to people like my barber and my dentist and things like that, of patients that have died from fentanyl overdose that were relatives, that people just come out and start talking to me about it. And it's like, oh my gosh, can I just take all those stories and put those together? And it just, it's such a monumental thing that occurs. Mm. You know, you don't think about it, but since 1996, over 400,000 people have overdosed with opoids in the U.S.
Sure.
That's a lot of people.
It is, and it's a national awareness. But it you've made the connection by actually bringing us to the source and placing us there, where otherwise it was a topic of conversation in a morning of those who were stuck and passed. Let me ask you. We go beyond the pharmaceutical companies and we go into government. Another area that people don't trust to a great extent.
Oh, sure.
Was the federal government receptive to what you had done, or were they pretty much trying to hush as well?
That's a great question, Ron. Mm-hmm. And part of that is that, you know, first of all, the Justice Department was really interested in picking the case up after I had wore the wire. Now, there are, you know, crosswinds that try to prevent white collar crime being hammered too hard. I mean, if you follow the story in the book and follow what has occurred with INSIS, what's amazing is that the people that started the promotion of Actique, which is the fentanyl that that Cephalon started, are the same people that promoted Fentora, which is with Teva, which is a fentanyl off-label, are the same people that promoted Subsys with INSIS off-label, which is a fentanyl. And not until recently that they were charged with by the Justice Department. So a lot of times what occurs, and that was January 2020. So a lot of times what happens is that it takes a long time to finally, you know, bring to bear who was responsible for this. And quite honestly, you know, the Pharmaceutical Manufacturers Association, you know, they make, the pharmaceutical companies make $400 billion a year. Mm-hmm. They take part of that for their lobbyists. So you get people that are influenced greatly by the lobbyists in policy. And so what I didn't realize is that I thought I'd just be a whistleblower and I'd get the information, we'd have a case and it'd work out.
Right.
Wrongdoers would be fined or imprisoned. That doesn't happen at all wrong.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think that it did, to be honest with you. I did not. If it did, then it would be too easy.
Yes.
You actually wore a wire at a point in order to gain information. Is that true?
Yes. You know, when this first started, they said, "Hey, would you like to help us?" And I said, "Sure." And I got a hold of federal agents for Office of Criminal Investigation. And so the federal agents said, "Hey, do you have information?" And I gave them the information. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Oh, this really looks good. The people in justice are really interested in what you've got." And then they go, "Would you wear a wire?" And it's almost like you go, "Huh? Yeah. Wear a what?"
I know.
And I said, "Hey, in for an ounce, in for a pound, I guess, whatever the saying is,"
yeah.
I decided I might as well.
Wow. Probably an experience you didn't think you were going to be entering at any point in your life here.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. And that in itself was, that was crazy. What, yeah, you know, I working with federal agents and wearing a wire. And,
I can imagine.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah. So, doctors, actually, to your knowledge, actually get paid to write prescriptions for these things?
Actually, what occurs with this is that physicians are able to write off-label, and that's a normal medical mm-hmm. practice, and that's something that's important within a doctor's armamentarium,
sure.
that they're able to wind up doing that. But the company winds up promoting and help paying for the CME for a physician, mm-hmm. which is the continuing medical education. And so they will give an honorarium to a physician to speak, but that physician usually is somebody that's well-versed in writing prescriptions mm-hmm. for the fentanyl products.
But that's still a payoff. It's still a gift. It's a solicited gift.
It is a solicited gift, yes.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So here you are. I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and that's what makes the book very, very interesting to me, is that here you are working for a company, an honest guy doing a job, and you open a door in a room, and all of a sudden crap dumps on your head, and you have to do something about it. You didn't choose to walk in that room like that.
So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, to this day, I guess you're just wondering, why me?
You know, first of all, I'll answer it this way.
Yeah.
One is that I did it because patients, I wanted to keep my job, but I was worried that patients were going to die, and mm-hmm. I was going to be on my watch.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the second was that, how do I make that change, and how do I am effective with that? And I thought it was local area managers that were doing it. I didn't realize the company's CEO was actually promoting that. So it was, I sort of got into it saying, "Hey, I'll do that." And I thought it would be a correction. I wasn't even thinking about being a whistleblower.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the nurse called me and said, "Hey, would you do something about it?" that I got a hold of the federal agents and started that process and wore the wire. So, and at that point, then everything changed in your life. You lost everything.
Yeah.
And I mean everything.
Yeah.
You know, even today, I still, when I do a charge card, I'm worried that the charge card's not going to go through.
Yeah.
Now, that's silly, because financially I'm stable now.
Yeah, but you've been conditioned to that, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, somebody that went through the depression period.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still conditioned.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, maybe we should all be conditioned for that. I don't know. I also don't understand where you weren't the only person who was exposed to this. There were probably a lot of other people in a lot of different pharmaceutical companies, and a lot of companies worldwide that are not pharmaceutical that are doing obvious wrong and obvious incredible harm. Yet most people don't step forward, and I guess the reason for that's like reporting rape, is that you just you don't want to get into it because you're taking a chance, you're giving up yourself. You're putting yourself to be attacked. So is that the reason that people don't come forward across the board in every situation that looks like incredible wrongdoing?
I think you know, it's fascinating. Peter Chatfield, my lead counsel, got me in touch with somebody at Harvard Medical, and he was doing a study. And the study was about, why do whistleblowers do what they do? And one of the things that came up was predominant for all the whistleblowers was that they had something in their life that occurred that first as an event. And when it happened the second time, they decided they were going to do something about it. And so for me, in my first company, something occurred that I decided that if I had an opportunity to step up, I would. And that's has a lot to do with that.
I got you. It's like correcting a previous life
or
something like that. Yeah,
exactly.
Being reincarnated.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's all fascinating. I urge everybody to pick up this book because you should. And as we're watching the world change for various social reasons, as far as freedoms are concerned, the way people are treated, bigotry, the whole bit, the Me Too movement, things are starting to change where people are like you, Bruce, maybe not going the full Monty there, but at the same time saying, I've had enough. This is wrong, and it's not going to happen anymore. And that seems to be across the world what's happening. So what you've done is kind of an example of the times in a sense.
Yes.
The book is it's fascinating. I'll repeat the title of the book. It's Cold Comfort pretty much, but it's Cold Comfort, One Man's Struggle to Stop the Illegal Marketing of Powerful Opioid Drugs and Save Lives. Cold Comfort, he is a Bruce Boyce, B-O-I-S-E. The book's available everywhere that you can get a book, I assume. Has it been released, indeed?
It's in a pre-launch right now.
Good.
And if you just go to bruceboyce.com, you can go to the website. And Ron, one of the things that I'm going to try to do with the book is to be a conduit for people that need help.
Great.
And get a hold of different, you know, addiction societies.
Yeah.
I'm sure folks are going to get a hold of me, and so that those experts can be known to the general public.
Very good. Excellent. It's Bruce Boyce, BOISE.com. Am I correct?
Correct.
Excellent. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, and I'll say also, Bruce, an honor, and I'm glad we hooked up, and maybe we'll be in touch again.
Oh, that sounds great. Hey, thank you much for inviting me, Ron.
Thank you very much. You take care. Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you so much for your time and your consideration and your financial contribution, which you did not make yet. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. I thank my guest very much for appearing on the program today, and I thank you for being here as well. Please join me tomorrow. I'll just be sitting here waiting for you any time of day. I've got nothing else to do, obviously. Have yourself a wonderful day. You can do it. I know you can. I wish you peace.